This is the Hans Shot First Podcast.
They don't know it, I'm telling you.
We'll be talking in-depth about common movie moments
from my dead body.
With the mix of all things pop culture along the way.
Yeah, Oscar.
Okay.
Welcome, everyone, to Hans Shot First. I'm Jeff, joined as usual by Scott and Alex. Say hello.
Hello.
Hey.
This week, we're talking about The Big Sleep.
We sure are.
Yes.
The Big Sleep, see?
This is an oldie. This came out in 1946. Directed by Howard Hawks. Written by William Faulkner, Lee Brackett, I don't know, and Jules... Firthman? I know. Starring Humphrey Bogart, Lauren Bacall, John Ridgely. I don't know. And Peggy Knudsen.
Martha Vickers.
Yeah.
Dorothy Malone.
Bunch of 1940s dames.
So, just let me jump in here, Jeff, on the trivia. The movie has quite a bit of interesting trivia, at least interesting to me. For starters, famously, at least at the time, I don't think this is common knowledge today amongst us anyways, maybe our parents, but Humphrey Bogart had an affair.
He's older than our parents.
But they would have a better idea of, like,
sure,
the scandals and gossips around some of the older Humphrey Bogart had an affair with Lauren Bacall while filming the movie. He wound up leaving his wife, so that was pretty spicy.
I'm glad that doesn't happen in Hollywood
anymore.
It's
all above board now. But
yeah,
back then, the studios owned the actors' contracts. You know, it wasn't like today where you just get, you know, paid movie by movie. And people were not happy with Lauren Bacall, of course, not Humphrey Bogart. Like, blame the woman. But so that caused a bit of a scandal. Bogart was, because of the problems with his marriage, at least according to the trivia, he was just, like, lit the entire time he was on set. And, like, and they had to, like, delay filming at times. And I don't know how much of that was just him and how much of that was because it was the 40s and... The guy was a heavy drinker.
As was the style at the time.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. He had to be doing a lot of drinking for it to be a problem.
I do love all of the... my notes, I put them the hot bookmarks.
Yeah.
Like, anytime someone's, like, working a counter in this movie, I guess it's not just books, but... there's always these very attractive women. But the woman in the Acme bookstore across the street.
She exploded after she put some TNT down Bogart's pants.
Well, that was cut from she's barely in the movie, but it's an actress named Dorothy Malone, and she would go on to win an Academy Award for Best Supporting Actress for a movie called Written on the Wind, a Western in 1956.
Oh.
So
I thought you were going to say Aliens.
This woman who didn't have much of a part, but she made an impression. There's a bunch of other trivia, just two more that I really wanted to hit here. So the movie is convoluted. We'll talk about that, I'm sure. But at one point, you know, there's different...
Scott's just knocking off items off my list left and right here.
Yeah, Scott, damn it.
You're knocking three items off my list.
Well, thanks for listening, everybody.
We'll save the trivia for the convoluted thing later, but the last one is
probably my number one. Let's hear it.
Yeah, is that Lauren Bacall is taller than Humphrey Bogart, right? So that's why she slouched in the car and every time she's in one of those scenes.
Oh, I thought it was because she didn't want to get spotted.
I mean, I think that was, like, why they thought they could get away with it, but that was, I think, the real reason.
Oh, I was wondering about that. She was, yeah, always slouched. Like, she was, like, high or whatever.
Yeah, and then there were, like, all the women in all these scenes are like, I think the exception of the very first scene with Martha Vickers is Carmen Sternwood. They're all wearing flats in the movie. Because, like, he's not Tom Cruise short, but, yeah, Bowie is not that tall, so.
Hmm. I like that they
comment on it. Yeah.
Yeah, they do. I thought that was really funny. But, anyway, sorry, I'm an asshole for I didn't stop to think that some of these things are as far as my history with it, I'll take that segue, Jeff. I
just run the whole show, Scott. Yeah, just do the whole thing on your own.
It's my
what do you got in sports to talk all about?
Yeah, my first time watching it, fan of noir and detective stories and I enjoyed it, and we'll get more into it.
We sure will.
All right, Alex, what's your history with this movie?
I've never seen a Humphrey Bogart movie besides Casablanca, and now I've seen two Humphrey Bogart movies. I've never even heard of The Big Sleep, so I was surprised when I found two on Amazon Prime is where I watched it. I don't know if you guys found it anywhere else, but
I went straight to Prime. Yeah.
Yeah.
Wait, for free on Prime?
No.
Actually, oh, okay. I did check HBO because they have like the Turner Classic stuff.
Classics.
Yeah, but
they have The Slender Man.
I did watch them on
Amazon. Yeah, I had to rent it for $2.49.
Are you out of your mind? But yeah.
All right, my history's the same. Never even heard of this movie. I've seen a couple Humphrey Bogart movies, including Casablanca. But I had never heard of this movie, and this is the first time I'd seen it. I also want to say that the director, Howard Hawks, I've always heard a lot about him. Mm-hmm. I don't think I've seen any of his movies, but he has these big westerns and stuff, like El Dorado and Rio Bravo, Red River. So those I kind of want to actually watch more than this. But
The one screenwriter, Lee Brackett, she went on to write, I think, at least El Dorado for Hawks. She's a very rare woman screenwriter in the 40s and 50s. Yeah.
And maybe I've seen El Dorado with my dad. I don't know. Some of these, I watched so many John Wayne movies with my dad.
I think you would have had to have seen El Dorado because it was just like on all the time, like on the cable. I don't know if you, yeah, anyways.
All right, well, with that, let's get into it. As usual, we're going to talk about seven items from the movie, if Scott hasn't named them all already. Scott, what's your number seven?
No, I'm good. I went through all seven. I'll leave it to the audience at home to guess which order. But yeah. To start off, I love the anachronisms here. This really isn't a comment on so much on the film here. You know, whether it was good or bad, but just all the different things that
forgot to silence my phone again.
all the things that, you know, were from the 40s, you know. all the telephones, you know, the story could have played out today with, you know, the same amount of using the phones, but having to, like, a couple times he's got to stop and like there's one point where he's using the rotary phone, and it feels like it takes an hour for him to dial.
Yeah,
like, it was a lot better when thing. Yeah.
It was better when he had to talk to the lady and was like, "Connect me to this place."
Yeah,
35 cents. Okay, here it is.
Time, I couldn't get over how the cars were unlocked. I didn't look that up. I'm assuming that was a thing. You didn't have locks on your car doors. Like, you just didn't leave stuff in your car, I guess. Except for guns, apparently.
Guns, your registration. Yeah. Where people could find you immediately.
They didn't have Muldoon there to tell them what to do. You needed locking mechanisms on the vehicle doors.
That's right. There was no clever girls in 46.
The word Shamus, which I'd never, like, I remember hearing before. And because they kept calling him a Shamus.
Yeah.
And I had to look that up in my minute and a half of Googling. It's obviously slang for private detective. Like, I think that much is pretty obvious. But, like, the first like site that I went to said basically that they thought it was from Yiddish, from Seamus, because, you know, Irish people are cops, I guess. And that got turned into this other spelling and saying, but yeah, it was just a term we don't use anymore. The collar pulling, stopping for somebody's list, but some of the violence towards women. What's that, Jeff?
Yeah, it's on my list as well.
Okay, then I'll say any more about that. Yeah, just all the old timey stuff, for lack of a better term. Yeah, that's my number seven.
All right, Alex, number seven.
My number seven is, and I thought this was clever. I don't know why I thought they wouldn't do this in 1946, but I thought this was pretty clever. When he was at the bookstore talking to the Acme bookshop proprietress, Dorothy Malone, he said, he's like, so what do you really do after they get done with their initial conversation? What do you really do? I'm a private dick on a case. And then right after he says I'm on a case, there's this thunderbolt. You hear thunder in the background. It's like, oh, man, he's serious. He's turning on the charms now. So I thought that was pretty funny. It's like, hey, that's pretty clever.
Yeah. All right, well, I'll go ahead and make this my number seven as well. It's a slutty librarian. What? I mean, that might as well be the start of a porno right there. It's like, I'm a private dick. What do you do? I want a case. Oh, really? She pulls down the shade.
It was so for the night.
It was so random. Like, what the fuck is going on?
He does ask her if he can hang out for a while.
Yeah, she was. Her panties hit the floor.
Yeah, no. She definitely was way more into that than.
And then he tells her to take off her glasses.
That was my favorite part, yeah.
You gotta do something about that.
You know, you look like shit with those glasses on, don't you?
Yeah, oh, there you go.
This movie, I mean, yeah, you talked about it. Like, the girls in this movie are... I've never seen girls like this in the 40s. I didn't know they could look so good back then. Jesus. And they're just all over him, and they're everywhere. It's like...
Yeah, it is... Like, I think you guys might talk more about that, but yeah, it is hilarious. Like,
yep. Yeah, higher on my list.
Okay, yeah.
But yeah, the slutty little book, I guess she's not a librarian, the slutty book girl, whatever. Oh my god, that was cracking me up. And then I was like, okay, is she going to come back in this movie? Nope, that's it.
I think he just seven. Like walks out. He's like, it's clearly you're willing to bone, but peace out. Like,
it was implied.
It's the 40s. It's the
40s. It was, like, for 1946, it was implied.
That's what I was. It was. Implied, I actually did it.
Or implode.
All right, Scott, number six.
My number six, and I did cover a lot of this in my opening rambling. And what you guys were just talking about, but yeah, but the hot book marms. So, again, it's not just the. So you got. Both women that work the bookstores. Well, one of them turns out to be kind of a bigger character, Agnes. When he's in the library, the actual librarian, she's very attractive. The cabbie is also hot and also willing to bone. And then, but yeah, just the waitress.
Both sisters.
Yeah,
obviously.
We'll get into at least one of them. But,
Bogey got into both of them.
It made more sense when they go up to the casino and they've got the...
Sure.
The cigarette girls, whatever you want to call them.
I'm Marlene.
Yeah.
I'm Charlene.
Chew your gum.
Yeah, just the 40s thing of they're not allowed to cast, like, any... Like, not necessarily unattractive, but not just, like ready for a pinup, like... like, shoot. Women in any of these roles. Yeah. That's my number six.
All right. Alex.
My number six, and it's not only this movie, but back in the day, man, people talked fast, especially in movies. Like, they couldn't get out their lines fast enough. And that, I think, helped a lot with the confusion of this movie and, like, what the fuck was going on. Along with the script and everything. But yeah, the fast talking, sometimes, like, I have to rewind stuff. I should have turned on subtitles.
Yeah, sometimes I did have to rewatch it. I did have to rewatch a few scenes, but for the most part, I really enjoy, at least the bogey stuff, anyway.
Mm-hmm. All right.
Everybody's talking real slow now.
On to my number six is the gunplay in this. It's pretty freaking awful, man. Just...
Well, you can't have equilibrium be every movie.
I like... And when he did shoot, they hold it. They're akimbo. He has the gun at his hip and his elbow down. You're like, what are you doing? Aim that shit. There's just a couple times, and then
nope.
When that one guy Joe Brody gets shot by the kid, and then he's running after him. He has no gun in his hand. Why does the guy just turn around and shoot him? He doesn't do that until later, and then just. But when he finally takes out the one guy, and he has his gun by his hip when he shoots him, I'm like, oh god. Bugging me.
So we've been trained by movies and TV for, like, especially the whip around when someone's got a gun in their back or whatever, which is an awful move to try to pull in real life, boys and girls listening, you know. But there are at least a couple scenes where he has the gun and then he just puts it in his pocket, and then he just, like, people are, like, standing right next to him, and, like, I kept waiting for someone to try to tackle him or something like that, and then they fight over the gun, but nope. It was like the conch of calling. It was like, oh, well, you're the one holding the gun now. Like, I'm completely powerless. Like, it was a weird thing.
Yeah. All right. Scott, number five.
Number five is the tension here when it, you know, kind of becomes a thriller at points is great. Like when he sneaks back into the house they go back to 17 times in this movie.
Well, sets are expensive, man.
Yeah, they are. But, like, yeah, this first couple of times, like, oh, this is really good stuff. Like, you feel the tension. Like, there could be some, you get the sense that there could be somebody in the next room. When Joe Brody goes to the door the first time and he doesn't get shot. Like, okay. He goes the second time. Oh, he's definitely getting shot this time. Like, mm-hmm. You know, and of course, like, the way they have him open the door was like, it reminded me of Frankenstein when he just walks in backwards. Like, you know, they had to make it dramatic. Yeah, just all the scenes in the cars, too, I think they're like the way that they're. You know, God, I think even in the 40s people were like, yeah, that looks awful. But but yeah, just the tension, like her slouched. You can see him tensing up here in those scenes. Where at one point he tells her that he actually is scared. Yeah, it's good stuff. Like, you know, for noir, it should be a little dark. And on top of there's only like two bodies, right, in this movie? Three? Wait, one, two.
I thought there was more than that. The kid that gets poisoned, the initial body.
Maybe like three or four that we see.
Guy gets shot at the end.
That's right.
Yeah. Hey, boys, it's me. Don't shoot. What do you say? He said the sheriff is dear.
Yeah, and then like that last scene before he's waiting for them to show up. You don't know how it's going to play out. So yeah, that's my number five. The movie does a great job of setting up some tension.
Yeah.
All right, Alex, number five.
My number five is the hidden gun compartment. That was another part of the movie where it was like, hey, that's pretty clever. It's just, I mean, there's no locking mechanism. I mean, even if you didn't know how to flip the thing down... You could still grab the gun from out of there. It wasn't like there was a combination on it or anything, but it was cool.
They don't lock their doors, let alone their guns. What are you talking
about?
Yeah,
that's true, yeah. Yeah, that's true. So it was neat. Just flips down, hey. Because the whole movie I was wondering, Jeeves H, everybody's got a gun except for the detective who should have a gun. Like, okay, there's his car.
Like, they say he has like a weird deputy badge thing. Like, I don't know what actual power that gives him, but...
Well, I mean, if you do have to get a detective license to be a private detective, and that gives you the license to carry a firearm.
Well, I mean, this is the 40s, though. Like, yeah, that's what I'm saying.
same things.
It's like the heyday of detectives. Police,
maybe, yeah.
Shamuses. Shamasai? Shamuses. Shamasi?
Shamisens.
Shami. Yeah,
when the guns felt out, like, when the thing flipped down, I was half expecting the bullets to start talking to him. All right, my number five. Is Bogey in this. I don't... What's the appeal of this guy? I don't know. It was weird. All the girls are throwing themselves at him, and he's... And here's so much about this guy. He's a little dude. I did hear...
Hey, I'm a little guy.
No, I mean, that's not what they're throwing, but doesn't seem that attractive. Like, he's just... I don't know, his pants are up to his nipples.
Correct. As was the style at the time.
Yeah, that was the style. I could see, like, two or three onions on his belt.
I did hear that he became a star because of the war. All the big, strong leading men got sent off to war, and then this guy who couldn't make the army because of his health conditions or whatever had to stay behind, and that's how we got these parts. That's something I read. I don't know if it's true or not, but... Yeah, I don't know. He's fine. Like, I get... I mean, he's... I don't know.
He does the fast talk, like it sounds yes. very authentic when he's doing like the clever one-liners. He does bring like this kind of world weary, I don't know, look effect to what he does, which works well with the detective thing. But yeah, he's also like he just looks like a dude. Like,
yeah.
I guess.
Yeah, that is, yeah, a very good quality in this, for his character in this movie, at least. Yeah.
I do like this is definitely, a very different character from the one he was playing in Casablanca.
Right. Played again, Sam.
Like I said, I mean, I guess he's fine in it. It just, I don't know, you hear so much about him. Like, he is the actor of this time frame, right? It feels like. It's like, all right, well, whatever. He's a dude.
Yeah.
All right, Scott, number four.
I have number four is Martha Vickers here, the actress playing Carmen. See, I'm trying to think of a 40s parlance for
smoke show.
The bee's knees.
She's black and white.
The cat's pajamas.
She's the cat's pajamas.
the first thing I actually thought of was that I think it's Lenny from The Simpsons, right? She has legs from here to ya.
Yeah, she does.
But she's wearing
legs. Like, at least that intro scene.
Yeah, like I don't even know. Like, I was shocked. I'm like, how did they let her wear that in the 1940s? Like, I guess because they were like.
Because it was in the 1840s.
Oh, so okay.
Yeah. My bad. And they were shorts. Remember, they were pants. Short pants.
That's true.
Not a skirt.
It was not a skirt. That is true.
Yeah.
But yeah, she just kind of was mesmerizing every time she was on the screen. Some of her dialogue was pretty bad, but I'm not going to put that on her necessarily. Yeah. But yeah, it's like Lauren Bacall is supposed to be like the sex symbol here. And then I felt like Martha Vickers was the better actor, the better, like, the bigger presence. When she was her scenes with Martha Vickers' scenes with Bogart, I think were a little more like charged for the most part. So yeah, I'd never really heard of her before, and I obviously haven't seen anything with her before or since, or obviously since I just watched this. But my point being that I had no idea that there was this actress that was, because I've heard of Lauren Bacall, but yeah, this other Bacall! Actress that was,
she's a bird.
Yeah, they could go toe to toe with her in this movie.
Bubba bird. She's a bird.
Bubba bird.
She's a bird. Okay. Oh, Bubba bird. Bubba bird. Oh, speaking of Carmen, yeah, I also went through skimmed through the trivia, and I heard that her performance was so strong that they had to cut out most of it.
Yeah,
because Lauren Bacall had the bigger contract, right? Yeah. She was supposed to be the bigger star.
Yeah.
It's like, man, Hollywood is cutthroat.
You mentioned Bacall. Have you guys ever heard a terrible song called Key Largo?
Down in Kokomo?
Oh my god.
The Beach Boys?
No, I don't even know.
Key Largo.
So it came on the Spotify playlist a couple times, and there's a verse. It's like, we're like Bogey and Bacall. And I'm like, oh my god, I hated it so much. Because it reminds me of that stupid Breakfast at Tiffany's song from the 90s, which I hate so much.
How does that one go?
No, Scott, we're not doing it. It's Bertie Higgins, Key Largo. Go listen to it on your own time, folks. It's terrible. But the part of the chorus is he talks about how they're going to fall in love like Bogey and Bacall. And I just
they're going to break up each other's marriages. And...
Yeah.
I don't know if Bacall was married at the time, but Bogey definitely was.
Yeah. I don't think so.
And I just, I've always, that lyric, and it just stuck in my head. I knew who Bacall was. I'm like, whatever. Okay, probably just some dame. And now I know. Filled in an empty void that I didn't need filled. Knowing...
You can go to Jeopardy now. That was the one piece you were missing.
So look up Key Largo. Scott, I dare you to put it at the end of this episode. All right. We're on to what? Alex, number four?
Yes.
All right.
My number four, and Jeff, you touched on this, but all the women fawning over Bogart in this movie. It's like, yeah, that might be the most unrealistic thing in this film. It's like, what are you, even more than the gun-holding bullshit. It's like, what are you, I mean, yeah, he's a guy, but these women normally would never give a guy looking like this, especially private detective, the time of day.
Yeah,
get the fuck out of my bookstore. What are you, you can't wait here.
It's not like he's Humphrey Bogart in real life. He is just this dick that looks like Humphrey Bogart without Marlo. The fame. And it's just like, what the hell?
Yeah, it is.
Get out of here.
It is hard to fathom. Like, he definitely has got the confidence. He's got, he's got the charm.
Yeah.
But
also, but like, that... it's like, oh, what should I call you? Well, not during the daytime because that's when I'm working.
Yeah.
Come on. Just in the 30 seconds that he met that taxi driver. Nah.
If only it was that easy.
City.
Man, I'd really like to be able to ask, like, somebody that. Grew up watching like some of these movies, what they thought of Humphrey Bogart.
That guy was a piece of shit. But yeah, now that explains it, why it wasn't like Clark Gable, Errol Flynn, or anything like that in some of these movies. It's like, oh, okay, it was wartime and he was there.
I don't know, like, I think like Clark Gable is pretty weird looking. Like,
no, but he's more of what I think of as old-timey Hollywood handsome. Like him and Errol Flynn.
I mean, Errol Flynn, yeah. Like, okay. Sure. But, like...
Yeah, Clark Gable's weird looking, but he's still, like, handsome.
I guess compared to Bogey.
Yeah, but Bogart's like, yeah, I mean, he's not a complete troglodyte, but he's a guy.
Not a troglodyte. Yeah, he's no Clint Howard.
Yeah. He's not... Clint Howard. He's not an Ugnaught, but he's a guy.
What's that move? Is he the one in African Queen, right? So he fits better in that movie. You guys ever seen African Queen?
I have not.
Maybe? But yeah, I know what you're talking about.
Did they remake that with Dwayne The Rock Johnson?
They did.
No, okay. Similar. Yeah, just the boat going down the stream. I forgot exactly where they are with Catherine Hepburn. But yeah, he's just kind of a schlub on a boat, and he's all greasy and everything. He's better in that role. But whatever.
Okay.
It's also older. I mean, I think that movie came out only 5 years after this. But
yeah. Even in Casablanca, I didn't even think of this. It's only when these women started throwing themselves at him. It's like, nah. Nah, dog. There's no way.
Yeah, you're right. The line about "Don't call me then. I'm still working or whatever." Like that was just, Jesus.
Jeeves must have been in his fucking contract.
Yeah. All right, Ron, am I number four?
Yes.
Yeah, and this is the, well, no one's, I don't know if there was, I don't remember if there was a slap in this. Not so much slapping women. A lot of women arm grabbing and manhandling in this movie.
Yeah.
He slaps her, he slaps Carmen a couple times.
To get her awake, but yeah. He wasn't holding back. Those weren't movie slaps.
There was the whole song she sings about domestic abuse at the casino.
Oh, Jeebus H. She's like, wow, that's a beautiful song. Just don't pay attention to the lyrics.
Yeah, yeah. And that's actually her singing, by the way.
Yeah.
Yeah, she can learn to call it sing.
Yeah, yeah. Pipes.
But yeah, singing a song about how some woman got beat by her boyfriend. Like, this jaunty little song about...
Yeah, it's 1946.
Different times.
Yeah.
Anyway, lots of arm grabbing and women shaking. And actually, the slapping, he was trying to wake her up. Probably had to hit her that hard. He hit it pretty hard there, right?
Yeah.
But, yeah. That's number four. Scott, number three.
My number three is the way the story is told here. I really liked how it's all from Bogey's perspective, from Philip Marlowe's perspective. I don't think he said his name once in the... this guy just named once.
Kind of like Bogey.
Marlowe's point of view. So we do... You're never like quite let in on what other people are thinking or definitely doing when they're not there or when he's not there. excuse me. The way that... I did like, so we'll get more into how convoluted this is, but I did like how he never really stops to explain, like, for the most part, like, how he's figured out whatever it is that he's figured out. He just moves on to the next thing.
His script told him to.
His script told him to, but he's like, he's like, no, this is how it was, instead of like, well, here's why, but you don't really get the why, but we'll get into that. But yeah, I did like that. That's the way that it moves. Like that, there wasn't really a whole lot of exposition because again, it's just from his point of view, him figuring out stuff as he's going along. And I like that. It's still pretty rare now when you only get one character's POV. So it is interesting for this, and it definitely works well with a detective story. So yeah, that is my number three.
All right, Alex.
I like that the mystery keeps growing in this movie. I thought that was a really cool aspect of the film. Where, okay, you got these daughters, they're wild, but he's being the old rich guy is getting extorted and he's getting blackmailed. So go stop this blackmailer. All right. He goes over there. Well, shit, blackmailer's dead. It's like, okay, now I got this to figure out. Then after that, there's a whole slew of other cast and characters, and this other guy that his wife is supposed to be running off with. We fished him out of the river. It's like, holy shit, how's all this connected? And even though it doesn't fully, like, I didn't fully understand how every piece connected by the end of the film, it was still very entertaining to watch. So the journey was more fun than, you know, the actual revelation and climax.
Yeah, there was...
It was the Martian that did it.
Yeah, a few great lines in this movie, but one of my favorites was when Vivian, Lauren Bacall, asks him, why did you have to go on? And he responds, too many people told me to stop. Like, I thought that was, that was like good. Some fantastic shorthand for like who he was as a person. And just a cool thing to say. And mm-hmm. just like, it's very reminiscent of like, it wasn't easy. It's like, yeah. It's like, well, you know, I'm just gonna keep going, you know, just gotta figure out this mystery. So.
Mm-hmm.
All right, yes. My number three kind of goes on with what we're talking about. I have no idea what was going on in this movie.
Yeah,
it starts out simple enough, and then you start throwing a lot of names, and I lose track of who the names are, and then I just get lost. Like, there's Stern Wells and Joe Rohde, and...
It's Stern Wells, Joe Rogan shows up.
Joe Rogan shows up. Marlon Wayans. And then, Who was the other, the big Eddie? No, big cheat. No,
Mars.
The guy. Yeah, Mars and Eddie Mars. I had a hard time following what was going on.
It was very convoluted. Yeah, let's get into it. That's my number two also. So one of the pieces of trivia I was going to say, that there's a lot of like, someone's probably apocryphal, but like there's a few bits of trivia about how the directors, the writers, the actors didn't understand some of the script. So namely, like, who killed the limo driver, which never gets resolved, by the way.
In the movie. Oh yeah.
They never like resolve who did it. Like at one point, Bogey says somebody didn't do it, but he lies to people in the movie, so you don't even know if he's telling the truth when he says that.
Yeah.
What limo driver?
The chauffeur. So the guy that they fish off at the pier.
Yeah, it was a limo.
Well, not limo. Whatever.
It was a Packard.
Yeah, well, sorry.
Yeah, it was a Packard.
The chauffeur.
But I think he was the driver. Yeah, he was the chauffeur.
Yeah, the chauffeur. Yeah, okay. Not a limo driver, sorry. All right. It wasn't a limo. Sorry, but same difference. Mm-hmm. Like they never explained who killed that guy or really even why. So they called up, so this is based on a Raymond Chandler novel who's famous for writing these kind of like detective stories. And they like
aren't sure. Could he be any more of a writer?
Yeah, they got in touch with this guy, and you know, one of the stories goes that he told them like, hey, it's in the book, leave me alone, basically. And then he went through the book. And then he went through the book and he was like, fuck, like, I don't even know. Like, they're right. Like, and like, he eventually got back to him or something. And like, yeah, I don't know. Like, so I thought that was pretty funny. And then just a little bit of unrelated side trivia, this is because we're talking about the writers. Did you guys recognize the name of Lee Brackett? Lay Brackett?
No.
She's one of the people with the screenwriting credit for The Empire Strikes Back.
Oh, awesome.
Oh, okay.
According to trivia, she wrote the first screenplay for it, and they didn't actually wind up using a whole lot of her ideas. But, you know, I guess the framework had to be there, right? So, she's like had a nickname like the Queen of Space Opera or something like that. So she wrote up like a lot of sci-fi and westerns, and so she had an interesting career. But anyway, I'm back to the.
She's got a credit in 2022 for Lego Star Wars: The Skywalker Saga.
Yep, still cashing in on that Star Wars.
Yeah. Thing.
So they basically are making up the movie as they go along, like, right? So they have part of the script. Howard Hawks apparently is doing constant rewrites. So they get to the point where they're like, okay, we have an ending here. Let's just roll with it. But like they finished knowing that it was open ended, like that there wasn't really closure on a lot of the mystery, which is good and bad. It sets like a really shitty precedent for other movies because it was very successful, yes, eventually. But yeah, it doesn't, like, just a lot of open-ended. We don't even know who killed the Sean character that we never see. It's implied that it was Carmen. But again, it could have just been Bogey lying. Eddie Mars says he didn't do it, but he's clearly had people killed before, so why couldn't he have? The Marlowe character is interesting because it's not that he's an unreliable narrator because we never get his inner monologue, but he's constantly lying to people too. So like we never really know, like, other than like the one guy shooting the other guy and Marlowe kind of being cold blooded about killing a couple people.
Well, he poisoned that kid.
Yeah.
Fuck that guy.
We do see a couple of the deaths happen on screen. That is true, but just a lot of the actual mystery, like how all the puzzle pieces fall into place, we never really get confirmation on, and it's kind of maddening.
Yeah,
and like you said, Jeff, I think there's one or two characters too many, like the guy that does get poisoned. like all of a sudden that guy's there, and just like this whole side story about how him and Agnes and are a thing, and like it was just like okay, I guess that's where we're going with this. That felt unnecessary. Yes, agreed. It's convoluted.
I just remembered one thing. I got so confused. Who was the guy? So they go back to that house for the 12th time or whatever, and the dude was in bed. Who the fuck was that dude?
So that was the guy that got killed initially.
And the Geiger guy?
Yeah.
Yeah.
They never explain, like, as far as I know, the cops, like, I guess it's just implied that when the other guy got turned over to the police, that they finally pulled that body out of the house. Because the body just would have been sitting there.
Yeah.
They never explained, like, if the cops come through or not. Like, it just kind of implied that they did, I guess.
There's no police tape.
Yeah, anywhere. They never explained, like, why that guy gets put back in that bed, though. You're right, Jeff.
Right.
Like, that doesn't make any sense. Like, he clearly got, like, he died of gunshot wounds, right? Or was it poison?
Yes. He was bleeding.
Well, I guess he could have puked blood. I suppose that's possible. But
yeah, I suppose. But he got shot. I think.
I don't remember. Do you hear gunshots? I don't remember. She screams. And by the way, I like how the scream is like right into the goddamn microphone. Like not. It's not like from any like meaningful distance.
Right. Well, you got to scare people in the seats.
Yeah, I guess so.
Got to get their money's worth. I think
another wise in the bed. Yeah,
he got shot.
Maybe that
he was tired. It was a big sleep.
Yes, yeah, he had a bogey going, and he's like, "I second the big sleep."
Yeah, oh, where was that line?
Yeah.
All right, so where are we at? Alex number two, right?
Yeah, so that's also me.
Yeah, my number two is Lauren Bacall. I didn't think she was burnt. She was great in this movie. Like, I thought she was good and everything, and I could see why she was a major Hollywood sex symbol. And then she started singing. I'm like, oh my gosh, this lady's got it all. And she's a heavy smoker, probably. I don't know. It's 1946.
The credits end with like a couple of cigarettes. Like, the sexiest thing you can do in the 40s is smoking cigarettes.
Yeah. Well, it's like a tiny phallus. Hold me close now, tiny phallus. Lauren Bacall is great.
There's when he goes to the speakeasy or whatever, the gambling place, there's just smoke everywhere.
You actually smell Vegas. Like the cigarette smoke as you're watching this movie.
God.
Mm-hmm. Smell-o-vision.
I'm just looking at this. Martha Vickers was in another movie with Jane Mansfield, so we probably have to watch that one.
That Jane Mansfield sure has some big breasts.
And it looks to be Bill Murray, but I'm pretty sure it's not Bill Murray. And a weird. Oh, we gotta watch this. See, every time I put IMDb, it just shows these random trailers. No, this is pretty good. My number two is there. The kick to the face. I don't know if you remember. It was a spot when he brings somebody back. And he kicks a guy in the face, and he missed him more than, I don't know, than the Godfather fight. Oh, God. And then the punch. I guess it was the kick to the face, him getting roughed up a lot, when one of the two tough guys like puts the hat in front of his face and punches him. I laughed at that. Hey, look at my hat, see? Bam!
Then, does the inside of my hat smell like chloroform? No. Man.
All of the little bogey getting beat up, I guess, and then the kick to the face was kind of the crumb de crumb. All right. Scott, number one.
Number one here is Bogey. I pretty much talked about all the reasons why I like him here as the hard-boiled detective, the world-weary thing, the fast-talking, the when he is, like, nervous and supposed to be nervous, it definitely comes off. Like, I appreciate again the difference here between this and Casablanca. I don't see like why women are throwing themselves at him, but but yeah, some of the dialogue I just absolutely loved. You know, the, there was that line about, you know, why did you have to go on? People told me to stop. At the very beginning when Carmen says, you're not very tall, are you? And he says, well, I tried to be.
Yeah,
yeah, that was a good one. He has a line about, in reference to Carmen, about how she tried to sit on my lap while I was standing up. You know, just a constant stream of one-liners that he really sells. You know, sometimes it gets simple. Like, again, a lot of stuff's from the beginning of the movie where the generals. I don't know why the guy had to be a general, by the way. Like, it seemed a little too grandiose. I think like a colonel or something like that. But he's explaining the situation, and Philip Marlowe goes, "Hmm," and the general's like, "What does that mean?" He says, "It means hmm." It just. You know, a line for everybody. I could go on. But,
he likes his brandy in a glass.
Yeah,
so do I.
Yeah. So all kinds of good stuff. So yeah, I really did like Bogey here.
All right, Alex, number one.
Also, Humphrey Bogart in this movie.
Bogart.
Yeah, I thought he was very charismatic. He did a very good job portraying Marlowe. I really liked when he switched personalities to try and fool the Agnes in the other bookstore to see if anything was up, and he asked for the editions, the rare editions of the books that didn't exist. That was great. That might have been my favorite scene. Just pushed up his hat, put on his glasses. He's got a lecture.
And then the second he steps out the door, he puts his hat back down because she's definitely not looking out the window.
Well, she's a woman. She wouldn't notice that.
That's true.
All right. And my number one, we already talked about a lot, but it was all of the stockpile of hot dames in this movie.
There are a lot of dames in this movie.
Oof, yeah.
It starts out with the sister. We talked about her already and her legs. And then just goes on. Like, everywhere you went, forever, every girl you met in this movie was like, Jesus. If only it was in color, I guess. I don't know. Maybe not.
They're real smoke shows. Especially the cigarette girls.
So we talked about that enough to continue. However, I just, as I'm on IMDb here, first of all, like, all the headshots of the men in this movie, maybe 80% of them have some form of hat on. This is how it was back then. So you have fedoras, hats.
You walked around with a hat on.
Cowboy hats, top hats. I don't know, it just cracks me up.
Stand of the time. Yeah.
And then that song I mentioned, Key Largo, apparently there's a movie called Key Largo starring both of them. So that's what that came from. That's it. Any History honorable solved. Mentions?
Yeah. Remember a while ago when, Scott, you were talking about how some phrases that are common now, but you didn't realize that they were like coined like way back, like when... What's-his-face in Animal House said, fuck this noise. And it's like, yeah, I've been saying that since the 90s.
Blues Brothers, but yeah.
Yeah, Blues Brothers, my bad. In this one, it caught me when it said, when Marlo was saying, today it seems to think a gat in the hand means the world by the tail. And it's like, gat? I only heard gat when, you know, I started listening to NWA.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, shit. Okay.
I mean, I always felt like that's a term from all these old gangster movies.
Really? Like, I've never heard it outside of, you know, recent times. In my lifetime, at least.
There was that guy when he goes into... I don't even know what happened there. He's driving his car. Next thing you know, he backed it into a ditch. And I'd have fucking blacked out there. What the hell is happening there? Anyway, he goes in. And the guy was literally leaning on a thing, flipping something in his hands. Like, out of a... Like the dolphin in Simpsons.
Oh. The coin flip.
Yeah. What was that all about? Oh, this movie. That Bogey and Bacall. Oh, God. All right, is that it?
Just a couple small bits of trivia. One trivia, one observation. The stickers on the cars, did you guys notice those? I think most of them said, like, B.
Missed those.
Yeah, so... All the cars in the movie, they have these stickers in the front on the windshield, and most of them have B, and that was to designate the gasoline ration that was going on during World War II. Uh-huh. So it was like, if it was a B, it was like you were allowed 8 gallons or whatever. Like, and there were other ones. Like, if you had like an X, then it was like unlimited or whatever. So I thought that was interesting. The other bit that we haven't really talked about was, like, we talked a little about the house, but yeah, the sets in this movie are not good.
No.
I think the one, like, the main parlor in the one house is cool, and that's about it. Like, like, where else they go? It's just kind of, it's a place. Like, when he's walking down the street, I'm like, oh yeah, that really looks like nothing. Like, it looks like nothing. Like, I guess it could be Hollywood. I don't know.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that's just, well, a thing about being an old movie, though. You couldn't really show the
scene. So the whole L.A. noir thing, like, they're in L.A. They mention it a couple times, and they mention things like Beverly and stuff. But then they don't go too deep into it. And then this real Rialto.
Yeah, I don't know what the hell that was. Like, they
thought they're mentioning Rialto, but it wasn't Rialto.
Rialto.
I mean, maybe back then it was just like them going out to Ventura or something like that. I don't know. Like, not far. Like, it was probably just desert back then. Who knows?
So,
Reseda.
All right. Reseda. That boy from Reseda. That
boy from Reseda.
All right, let's rate it. As usual, we rate on a scale of 1 to 7, 1 being garbage, 7 being perfection. Scott, what do you give it?
Give it a 5. I liked it. I liked the mystery here, even if it wasn't fully explained. I like Bogey. I really like a lot of the actors in this. And it's just interesting to watch something like this, so 5.
Yeah. Okay. Alex?
I'm going to give it a 4. For pretty much the same reasons. It didn't have enough of a conclusion. Oh yeah, that's the other thing that these movies have in common. They just kind of end abruptly.
Oh, I love it.
Everything's right, red. The end. No credits. I'm out.
Yeah.
Yeah, 4 for me.
All right. I'll give it a 5. It's a low 5, but I'll go to 5. I liked it. It has some issues, but I definitely enjoyed it more than I thought I would. So, a 5.
Yeah. I think I liked Casablanca better than this. I forgot what I scored it, but I'm pretty sure I liked it better.
I think Casablanca is a better movie, I think, yeah.
All right, and with that, it's time for a crossover topic, which is what, Scott?
Our top 5 hidden guns, as per the guns in the sub-glove box, whatever. Anyway, right on the heels of Once Upon a Time in Mexico. My number 5 is Once Upon a Time in Mexico. Johnny Depp, how he's got the fake arm. So the gun itself isn't super hidden, but because he's got the fake arm, he's able to hold the other one underneath like the table and whatever else he's got going on. We talked about that before. That was clever. So that's my number 5 is Johnny Depp's, like, under-the-table gun, I guess.
That's a good one.
Okay.
Yeah. Right. Alex.
I tried to keep these, like, guns hidden in compartments, kind of like his, not just, you know... it was a tough list, by the way, to try and find clever gun compartment stuff. But my first one's not so clever, because it was from The Simpsons, and Marge told Homer to get rid of that gun. And when Bart was trying to get a better foothold to get the fudgicles from the freezer, he opens up the vegetable crisper, and lo and behold, there was Homer's revolver. And, I mean, Homer has a good point. What are the odds the boy's going to look in the vegetable crisper?
It's true.
Are you some kind of idiot? All right. My number 5, so I took this a different way. Just any kind of hidden weapon or gun. I try to keep it to guns, okay. But in one there is a weapon. But my number 5, keeping the comedy realm here, would be the Fembots with the guns in there.
And the jumblies.
Bras. Yeah.
So, women of such high caliber.
Exactly. Since we've just done that recently, it was on my mind, so Fembots is my number 5. Scott.
I'm number 4, going back to the world of Robert Rodriguez. It's the guitar case rocket launcher from Desperado that one of the other banditos that's associated with Antonio Banderas.
Mm-hmm.
Pulls out. And he does this cool, like, Spider-Man pose when he shoots the rocket, too. It was like one of the first things I thought of. It's cool. It's my number four.
Mm-hmm. All right. Nice. Alex, number four.
My number four is from The Fifth Element, when the guy with the nice hat shows up to Corbin Dallas's apartment, and then Corbin had Dallas takes his gun, and then lo and behold, he lowers like this big hidden compartment of just a basket just full of guns, and just puts another one in there to add to his collection, and it goes right back up.
Give me the cash.
Give me the cash. It's a nice hat. You like it?
That's such a weird
scene. We should do that movie again.
Yeah. All right, my number four. This is the only one that's a non-gun, but it's the compartment's cool. And it'll be hiding your weapon inside of R2-D2's head so he can shoot it to you or jump a sail barge.
Oh, okay. Dang, that's good.
At any point did he hide a blaster?
No blasters.
I don't think so.
Yeah, I don't know. He came in with no weapon, and then he tried to pull the blaster off of the guard's waist earlier in the Jabba scene.
Yeah. Well, he got the gun.
But he couldn't get to it, because...
Yeah.
He got jumped.
The other Moblin got him by the hand before he could shoot Jabba.
But yeah, I'm trying to think of any blaster hiding. I don't think so. All right.
Han Solo hides it under the table.
Yeah. McClunky.
Scott. Yeah, and he shoots first.
Number three.
Number three is more of a, like, kind of like the R2. Clunky. It's more of a compartment than to, like, have the intent of hiding a gun. But once it's in there, you can't tell it's there anymore. And that's RoboCop. And that's
my number one. He's son of a cool. bitch.
Well, I'll save the rest for you.
Alex. Yeah, that's the ultimate
hit. That was gun. Literally the, well, not the first, the second thing after the rocket case, but that I thought of. So that's my number three is the Auto 9. Yeah. The leg compartment.
All right. Alex?
My number three is True Lies. You guys remember this hidden gun?
Hidden gun of True Lies.
It's when the rookie from the team is posing as a reporter, and he's just...
He's
got the camera and everything, and he just creeps up. And bah, he doesn't have tape in there. He's got a gun. He takes out the bad guys. Thought that was neat.
That's cool.
All right. My number three is the Penguin's Umbrella from the 66 Batman specifically.
That's pretty good.
So. Ah. Scott, number two.
You're a bum, Batman.
You're a bum.
Number two is from Kiss Kiss Bang Bang. Gay Perry.
Yeah.
He's got the Derringer in his, basically in his jock strap, underwear.
Yeah.
Basically by his crotch. Because he knows that dudes are too homophobic to actually check there. Without spoiling too much, the hidden crotch gun, because it's been made. Val Kilmer.
All right. Alex, number two.
My number two, we've talked about iterations and the other movies in this franchise, but El Mariachi, the original, where the guitar case that he finds is, there's a facade of a real guitar on top, but it flips open eventually to reveal a whole cavalcade of armaments.
A cornucopia?
Yes. Would you say I have a plethora of guns?
Plethora?
Si, Mariachi, you have a plethora.
Could it be...
Good. I love El Jefe.
All right. My number two is from The Godfather, the gun behind the toilet tank.
Oh, yeah.
Nice. Yeah.
Just be sure.
Salazzo and the sheriff.
Just be sure when my brother comes out of that bathroom, he's got more than just his dick in his hand.
Bada bing!
Right all over your Ivy League suit. Anyway, Godfather, toilet gun. All right, number one, Scott.
Number one is Die Hard. McClane duct tapes the gun to his back. Hans. Yep, not much more to say there. We all know it. We love it. Mm-hmm. Yippee-ki-yay. All that. Die Hard.
Motherfucker.
Motherfucker.
Hans.
Namesake.
All right. Alex, number one.
RoboCop. Murphy himself. Yeah, it's in his leg, for fuck's sake. You can't even tell he's holding a gun until boop, pops out. Awesome. That's the best.
Well, I don't know if it's as good as Sex Machine's gun from Dust Till Dawn.
There it is. I almost put it on the list.
So stupid. Tom Savini's Sex Machine's gun. The titty twister.
Gun like that shows up number in one Jeff? Of the machetes, right? Somebody's got a crotch gun. Anyway,
I think
I've never seen
like
the
Sophia Vergara or something like that's got a crotch gun. I forget.
I should watch those because I was on IMDb looking up Danny Trejo's work. He's got an upcoming one called Machete in Space.
Are they actually making that?
Yeah,
awesome.
Robert Rodriguez directing, so yeah, I can't fucking wait.
Machete.
In space, cabrón.
Any honorable mentions?
Just any movie, any spy movie where it's like, oh, you know, come into my kitchen and they flip around a bunch of fucking guns in the cupboards and the gas range flips over to turn into a bunch of guns, you know, all that stuff.
All the Bond movies. Let's see, when we did... You Only Live Twice, he had the cigarette gun that fired like a little rocket.
Oh, yeah.
The projectile.
That's right.
Yeah. Exploding projectile.
Taxi Driver. He's got that little mechanism up his sleeve.
That's what I kept thinking of, but it wasn't Taxi Driver. There was other movies where up the sleeves.
It's in Silverado, Jeff Goldblum had one of those, yeah.
Was it Hudson Hawk where that butler guy had two huge swords that came out from his sleeves?
I've never seen Hudson Hawk.
I forget.
Is it that one?
Yeah, no, he had like trigger blades. They were like huge swords, but they were like
really okay, long, I remember, like, I guess, I should watch Hudson Hawk again. I remember them being swords. How did he get those in his sleeve?
If we're going to watch it, we should do it for the podcast.
Well, yeah. Isn't it on your list? It should be.
I know Jeff wants to watch it.
I had one honorable mention, but it was more from In the Line of Fire, him making the gun that would get through security. That,
Doesn't quite count. I wouldn't. Yeah. I don't think I would have allowed it since.
All right. Well, I'm glad I didn't add it to my list then.
Yeah. It's like, because he takes it apart and then he puts it together. It's hidden, but yeah. The gray area.
All right. Well, it's time for Alex Knows Sports.
I'm Alex, and I like sports.
Sports ball?
So I know in sports, it's common for players to hear boos, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like a lot of boos. And it's even common for players to hear boos from their own fans, right?
Yep.
Yes.
But I think the French are taking it to Messi a little bit too much. Because I guess he's not performing as well as he had in the World Cup and a bit before. He's playing for Paris Saint-Germain, and I guess they hate him because he's just not playing good. So the fans are just booing him ruthlessly.
I mean, I don't know
how but, like, I mean,
good or bad he's playing, but like, you can see how soccer fans, if someone is in God tier, they're like, "Oh, this guy's awful. Get rid of him."
Well, I mean, he did go from a goal every 138 minutes, an assist every 118 minutes, down to a goal every 210 minutes, and an assist every 420 minutes. So, those are numbers.
Those definitely are numbers. Can I argue with
that?
Yeah, I have no idea.
But yeah, I mean, do fans, cause even in a baseball game, do fans boo their own players just because they're not playing that well?
It depends where you go. Like,
depends. Not like they got traded or they betrayed the team or something like that.
Well, I mean, they're on a different team then, so that makes sense. But
right.
But if, like...
Circumstances. It's all circumstances. If the guy
It's up.
Got a big contract that he, you know, he signed for a lot of money and they don't think he's living up to it. And
I see. Okay, then I guess right. this might be
like if, that you, happens, if you're somewhere like in one of the okay. East Coast teams, I can see it happening because those people are, yeah. are animals.
Yeah, you know, not here in the West Coast.
Yeah, if you're like
in, well, you know, it's more east than the East Coast. France.
Yes. The deep
land
east
of the rising
coast.
Sun.
I think it happens pretty regularly in like places like Boston and New York and Philadelphia.
Never in California where people treat each other right.
Yeah.
Oh, I can't wait for my first Angel game. I'm going to boo the hell out of Moreno. Fuck that guy.
It's going to be yell. You're going to pick one of the luxury boxes and just guess which one he's in. Yeah, yeah. Yeah. Just boo up there. Just face in that direction. You see a little bit of basketball, like the Lakers. People start sneaking. I think Russell Westbrook was getting booed before he got traded away.
Okay.
So, but he was playing terribly, so there you go.
Oh, okay. Hey, I don't know. That just seems mean.
We talked about this before when we did the wrestler. Like, they're all people. You know, it has to feel bad. But then, mm-hmm. you know, they get to go home to their millions and millions of dollars. And I'm guessing that takes a little bit of the sting out of it.
A little bit.
For most of these guys. Like, I'm sure some of them are making, like, relatively great money compared to other players anyways.
Messi's not hurting from it.
Yeah, no, Messi. He's fine. Yeah, Messi's is going to live a pretty comfortable life when he's done with soccer. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. He's going to go to Salt Bay's restaurant and then keel over.
He's going to have a heart attack right there as they peel the meat off the bone.
It's time for NIM News.
Yeah.
It was yeah. All right. So, did you guys see episode 5 of season 3 of Mando?
Yes. I just watched it tonight.
The Pirate is the name of the
episode. That one. The last week's episode.
Yeah.
No.
Yeah.
I mean, yes, I did watch
it. I've seen both of them, so yes.
Okay. We'll only talk about The Pirate then. And we'll save that for last. So outside of that, the only thing I want to talk about was some video game news. I don't remember if we talked about this last week, but did we talk about E3? Do you remember, Alex?
I don't remember, but it's canceled.
Yes,
so
that's what I was going to say. Is that E3 is officially canceled this year? Just not enough of the exhibitors, the publishers, to show up to kind of make it worth it for them to fill out the LA Convention Center. So I don't know what this means for the future. Maybe this is like the final death throes of that show. The pandemic, a lot of the big publishers had already kind of pulled out. I think before, like, Nintendo was the only one of the big three, as it were, that still had a presence on the show floor, whereas Sony and Microsoft were kind of doing satellite things that same week. You know, with Nintendo, you know, it feels like they're out permanently, but who knows? But without those three and a lot of the other big publishers, like, I mean, Activision is Microsoft now, so they're not going to be doing that. You know, EA, I don't think has done it recently. It's like down people like Square Enix and Sega and Namco Bandai, I think, was there. But yeah, like just a lot of the big publishers just aren't there anymore either. Yeah, it's feels like the end of an era, as it were. Once Upon a Time was a like a wild thing to get to go do.
Yeah, I know, it's bananas. But there was a time where they did like small shows that was on industry like only, like it wasn't open to the public or even to the press. Well, maybe some press, but it was super small for a few years. I remember.
Well, there's still,
and then
still,
they came back to being big, and now this.
There's still the thing in the San Francisco over here.
GDC?
GDC, thank you, Alex.
Yeah.
So that's more for developers than that. But
right. Yeah. So maybe they'll try scaling it back again.
I do kind of hope though that they keep it to that like that point of the year. I am hoping that, you know, around the beginning of June, there will be that glut of new video game announcements. there's really no reason to hold to that other than just kind of like, well, that's what we did before kind of thing.
Yeah.
You know, in a way, it feels like the Video Game Awards has kind of become that venue where everybody saves their big announcements, whatever, for the end of the year. Which is actually kind of not the best time to do it, because because if you want to drive your holiday sales, you want that news out before Christmas. Anyway,
no, you build hype for next Christmas.
Yeah, exactly. A year from then.
During this Christmas, yeah.
Everybody's like forgotten except for the diehard people. anyways, yeah, E3 canceled.
Like John McClane.
It's official. So yeah, that's all I wanted to talk about. Alex, anything you want to go over?
Yeah, real quick movie review. Recently, my family and I watched We Got a Ghost, or We Have a Ghost. And on Netflix, initially I thought it was going to be like a Ghost Dead type of, you know, stupid movie and everything. But it turned out to be surprisingly very good. It falls into the genre of kid befriends magical being and they have to protect it. You know, kind of like E.T. or... I mean, Mac and Me to a lesser degree. Or Echo. Or, you know, those type of movies. And Anthony Mackie actually is starring in this film, and he does a great job. It's like there's some real heartfelt moments. There's some real danger. Like, you can feel the tension and the danger in the movie. Because if movies like this don't have, like a edge to them, then, yeah, they're... I mentioned Mac and Me a little bit ago. If movies don't have an edge to them like this, then, you know, they're going to just fall through the wayside. But We Have a Ghost. It's very good. It's David Harbour as the ghost. So I recommend. It's a good family watch.
Cool. Anything else?
Nope, that's it. Right. Still playing The Witcher 3. Still great.
Yeah, I'm still I did beat the Resident Evil 4 remake. And now I'm doing like all the... like the harder stuff, like the unlocks and stuff. And I don't know
all the blue coins.
I don't know why I'm doing it. I don't know what I'm doing this to myself because it's just straight stressful.
You want that Chicago typewriter?
Yeah, I do. I do. Really do. Jeff, anything you want to go over?
Just a couple things. Star Wars Celebration is happening this weekend. It's over in Europe this time. It's in London.
When do you fly out?
I am not, but we know somebody who is going to be there, Jared.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
Jared's cool. There with a friend, and yeah, they're going for the whole... They've been there this week, I think, and they're ending with this, something like that. So that'll be cool. But,
I mean, there's not really anything else to do over there.
Exactly.
You know, I'm there for the whole week.
But that's the reason they're going. But yeah, it's in London for 3 days, so I think it's a day shorter than it is when it's over here. I don't really know what they're promoting because I don't think there are any new movies. All I hear is they just keep canceling movies. But the shows, I guess. And
yeah.
I mean, there's probably still like, plenty of new model lightsaber stuff from the works, right? There has to be, because I don't think they really hold it up to that same standard, do they?
Not for movies, but for shows they still have. Like, yeah, The Bad Batch just came out on streaming. And
What I mean is maybe they pump the brakes on the live action stuff, but did they do it for the animation?
Well, I'm saying for streaming, they're not pumping the brakes on anything. There's animation and live action stuff. It's for the movies, and I don't think they've ever made an animated movie, have they? No.
I just meant like I thought they
droids.
Were
droids.
I thought they were that Iger was like, we're cutting back on everything.
Oh, I don't know.
Especially people.
Yeah.
So anyway, that's. What's going on? I always tune in and watch the live stream. It's fun to see all the fans show up and go crazy. And oh, here's Anthony Daniels. Yeah. Go crazy. He's going to tell the same story he has the past fucking 45 years.
No one can gainsay him because nobody else is dead.
And then the new game's coming out from Star Wars. The Fallen Order Survivor. Or I don't know. Fallen Order. Like that. So Survivor. I'll probably get it. Kyle Kestis. The first one was fun.
You can play it on your Xbox, Jeff.
I can, but I'll play. I got the last one on my PC, so I'll play on my PC. I may wait.
Your Xbox. I meant your Xbox Series.
Yeah, I know what you meant. I chose to ignore it. That's all I got. So I guess talk about Star Wars some more.
Okay. So, jump in, spoiler alert. We're unzipping.
Whoa, Mando.
Small spoilers. So, Mandalorian Season 3, Episode 5, Chapter 21, The Pirate. Starts off with one Carl Weathers. We finally circle back around to Navarro and all the problems with the pirates, the pirate problems. They basically start getting bombed. He sets off a message. He doesn't want to do it, but he sends a message off to
What's that guy's name? What's that captain's name? The pilot's name.
Yeah, I don't know. Jeff? I have no idea. The New Republic guy.
That guy's been in, like, every season. He shows up somehow. The Outer Rim X-Wing pilot guy for the Republic. One Carl Weathers needs help. He's super reluctant to do it, but he calls on the Republic to do it. And he sends out the message. By the way, IG, whatever his designation, does not show up again. So that was a whole, like, why?
Wait.
I'm just saying it's a waste of time.
I mean, I hope it doesn't.
We jump back to Coruscant. I think they've gone overboard on like how bogged down the Republic is with the bureaucracy. Like, it doesn't quite add up to me. I don't know how you guys feel about it.
I think they're trying to make the new sequels make sense. So this is why the First Order was in control. I think they're just trying to make that make sense.
I could see like how the Republic would have bitten off more than they could chew. And so like, yeah, they can't like monitor what's going on, like the Outer Rims or whatever the hell they call it. But for them just to be like that, just like, it's like catch 22 levels of bureaucracy. They go there. We get a cameo from Tim Meadows.
God, I'm tired of these cameos.
You're not gonna
like, I don't know, we just saw Jack Black, spoiler alert, like, it's fucking ridiculous. Like, it just totally takes you out, and I don't like it.
Well, I'm fine with Tim
Meadows. I'm not,
so it's not like he's like an A-lister or anything.
It's still he's an SNL guy. He kind of go, I can do the robot, like, and just walk out. Like,
that would have made sense.
Yeah, that would have been so cool. But we see what's her face again. She's so evil.
Her name is Kane, for Christ's sake.
Kane, yeah.
By the way, it's Captain Carson Teva is the Outer Rim X-Wing pilot.
Okay. He's supposed to be in the military too, the Tim Meadows character, right?
Yeah,
it's like a colonel.
Yeah, Colonel Tuttle.
she shows up again. I don't know why, like, she gets to like give her opinion on anything, but she's there. You know, she's worming her way into stuff. She clearly doesn't want them to go to the Outer Rim.
Tuttle just wanted an excuse to get out of this conversation.
Okay, so then there's a little bit of like information there that we had where the Empire is doing stuff there based on her trying to keep them out of it. I do like her though, like, again, Katie O'Brien is the actress. All the bureaucracy, the Tim Meadows is like, no, we can't help. Captain takes it upon himself. We get back to the Mandalorians. You get the, you know, they can take our lives, but they can never take our freedom speech. A couple of those, and the Mandalorians go to kick some ass. That's basically the whole episode until the end of it, where all of a sudden the armorsmith is like, it's awesome that we had this like a home again, but let's go back to Mandalore. Like, that felt very abrupt. I don't know how you guys again felt about that. It was also very abrupt when she tells Bo-Katan and take off the helmet. She's like, oh, you've walked both paths. And it's like, no, she's She's been like the helmet Mandalorian thing for like a week. Like, what are you talking about?
Oh, because she saw the Mythosaur.
She did see the Mythosaur. Okay, I guess having it's seen the Mythosaur is not. I guess that makes it not as bad. But they go on and on and on about how if you don't have the helmet, you're not Mandalorian. It's like, oh well, I guess you could be both. We'll make an exception in your case. Like it's.
It's probably, you know, that plus her prestigious house that she comes from.
Yeah, I mean, it does make sense that, like, she can go wrangle up the non-helmet people, the helmeted ones. Like, she'd get them all together. Yeah. Like,
yeah.
So
she walks both worlds.
Yeah. And then you get the thing with the captain where he finds the ship where Darth Gideon has been absconded by dun, 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 somebody with Beskar.
Mm-hmm. So yeah, we don't know if oh shit, that's in this episode, this latest episode. Never mind.
So not having watched the latest episode, I couldn't help but think that Bo-Katan had something to do with it. Like, although the Empire did come to her like castle and blow everything up. So that's kind of a convoluted plot, if that's the case.
Yeah, I don't think so. All her armor was intact. She lost her shoulder pad.
No, I'm not saying she personally did it, but like she helped orchestrate it.
No, because she got kicked out. Or she didn't have any followers anymore.
All right.
At any rate,
not a spoiler, like, Scott. They do not address that at all in this latest episode, so we don't know. Anything. Okay. It's kind of a frame job of some kind, or it's a bad version of the Mandalorians, right? They always say there's just different factions. I don't think it has anything to do with her, right.
Yeah,
or anyone we know, but it's possible.
We'll find out in the next episode.
So yeah, Navarro is like,
I guess we took a job.
The side paradise that now has a bunch of badass Mandalorians to help keep the peace.
I mean, you love it when the entire townspeople went to the rocks and there was like 30 people there, if that.
Yeah, I did notice that. There was
this is the most low-budget, high-budget show I've ever watched in my life.
Well, everybody else went underground and stuff, or they had...
Townspeople, follow me! And then there's like 20 people. Let's hide behind a rock.
Well, they had to blow a lot of the budget on the Boba Fricks.
Yeah,
a lot of those dudes. I did like awesome. The Salacious Crumb guy helps him out.
Yeah, the monkey lizards. Yeah, they're like, hey, they're over there. Close up in ambush.
Yeah.
I like how a bunch of guys with jetpacks got like were getting cornered and flanked.
Ambush.
Like, what the hell? Just fly up, assholes.
I was just like, on one hand, it was awesome to see the Mandalorians be badasses. On the other hand, it's like a handful of pirates, like kind of keeps them in check. Like, you think they'd be a little more like capable than that, I guess.
But they didn't. Did they lose a single Mandalorian though?
No, they didn't. Yeah. They didn't.
They did not. Some got injured.
A bunch of them got shot.
Yeah. See? Yeah. There you go.
I did have like a fist pump moment when you see the armorsmith show up. Like, and then I did laugh out loud when she grabs the guy by the tongs, because I'm like, that can't do anything. Like, that just looks stupid. But
she broke his spine.
I guess. I don't know.
Those aliens, that's alien species, little known fact, they have a very tiny spine back there in the neck, and she got the nerve. She pinched the nerve. I mean, they're dead.
So that was what do you think about these pirates, like, literally being space pirates? There's Shmee up in space. The Ugnaught just.
Yeah, there was. I didn't look at the credits, but was that Warwick Davis?
I don't know. It was probably the guy who played the Ugnaught in the first movie, or the first season. And then the starship had a wheel. It had a freaking, and he's turning it to the right. Like, what? There's a rudder on that thing. Like, what's going on? Like, I don't know, man. I know it's all Star Wars comes from old westerns and stuff like that.
Yeah,
like
old series.
But some of it's a little ridiculous.
So my big takeaway from all this is, I'm hoping this leads to like a finale where a shitload of Mandalorians are fighting an equally shitload of Imperial or whatever, New Order, whatever the hell they call themselves. And that the New Order finds out that they fucked with the wrong, like, I don't even know what to call the Mandalorians.
Mandalorians.
They're like space
Mandos.
Monks. Like, I don't even know what the hell to call them. Like, that's the Jedi, right? They're the monks. Like, I don't know what the fuck to call them.
Space wizards.
Yeah, I don't know. But at any rate, I'm hoping that's what they're angling toward.
Space barbarians.
To have a big battle and the Mandalorians show like why they got nuked.
So one thing we got to bring up, when all the pilots were in their little space bar or whatever, and Teeva's gets the message from Apollo, and that big alien dude comes up to him, starts talking to him. That's a huge deal because that's a character that was in the show Rebels. Like, he was one of the main characters, and it's voiced by the same guy from the show. So if you,
that guy was huge. Was he a pilot? That's cool.
He's
huge.
I mean, in the show, he's like the muscle, right? I don't know if he actually piloted.
Yeah.
I don't think he flew too much in that show. I just think it was that Hera chick. But it was, you know, that show was about a group of like five or six people. I don't remember exactly. And he was one of the guys on the crew of the ship. Okay. So,
yeah.
That's cool.
Yeah.
Is it Ralph McQuarrie's original design for Chewbacca?
That is true, too. Also... like I mentioned last week, the show is totally not about the Mandalorian. It's Katie Sackhoff, the Bo-Katan character, is...
I know, she's the Mandalorian this season.
Okay, that's fine, but I mentioned it last week, and you guys said I was kind of crazy. Like, I think even... Yeah.
Really?
This next episode proves it even more. It's like...
Yeah.
They're even pushing Baby Grogu to the side, which is fine with me. I just...
Yeah, because he was getting a bit much.
Yeah, so whatever. You know me.
they have been using his name a lot more. I wonder... Not Grogu. Well, yeah, Grogu.
Jin.
And I wonder if that's Jaren. Why, just so that you can be like, well, the Mandalorian doesn't necessarily have to be him at this point, right? So
yeah. Din Djarin.
This could be Katie Sackhoff. It could be Grogu. It could be the Armorsmith.
No, because he can't speak the words yet. Maybe in another 75 years, Grogu will be able to speak the words.
But yeah, like I said, I'm fine with it. Like I said, I love Katie Sackhoff and all that stuff, and the character seems pretty cool. Like, I was kind of worried to bring another cartoon character in, but she's been doing really well here. I don't know.
I think like the meta of it all is just like. We can't keep Katie Sackhoff in the helmet. Like,
yeah,
it's bad enough that we're keeping Pedro Pascal like with the helmet on all the time. Like, we can't do that to two stars. Like,
there was something else I wanted to bring up. I don't know. I am not really enjoying this season. It's freaking cheesy. I think this Filoni character. He comes from the Lucas thing where they have good ideas, like abstract concepts, but they don't know how to put it to pen and paper. And then you'll hear about him talk about it at Celebration, and he'll describe it, and you're like, oh, that's what's going on. That's really freaking cool. I like those ideas. But on screen, it's like, I'm not getting any of that. And it's just
Is he the showrunner?
Yeah, him and Favreau both are.
Okay. Because I was curious, like, how much Favreau is doing at this point.
Yeah, him and Favreau, as far as I know. And I think he kind of took on the... On this show, actually, he might have been doing less because I think he's doing more of the Ahsoka show. I don't know how it's going on. I know the first two
seasons. I've been paying attention, other than that one episode where I noticed that it was directed by one Carl Weathers. Like, who's been directing these? Do you know, Jeff?
All over the place.
Well, the latest... Yeah, again, Bryce Dallas Howard... directed the latest episode.
Okay.
Yeah, and that it's a lot of the same people. Fukuya or whatever, he did a couple. Done a couple episodes.
Antoine Fuqua.
It was not Antoine.
No, Rick Fumagalli, because he was in this episode. Had Deborah Chow, him, and Filoni had like cameos in that space bar again. They've had cameos a couple times.
I thought he was the captain. Whatever, was that not?
What?
I thought that guy was the guy that played the captain.
Like the Asian bald dude?
Yeah.
No, he's just an actor. He's not one of the...
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, actually, yeah, Rick Fumiwo is a black dude, and not the Asian guy. Yeah.
So. Well, I'm embarrassed.
No. Yeah, I think, I don't know. Yeah, we'll see. In this last episode, same thing. Yeah, there's moments. There's other moments.
Talk more.
Literally Queen of Hearts moment in this last one. That was maybe one of the shit myself, but we'll see. Yeah, yeah, you thought playing croquet with a bird and a gopher was weird? Well, wait till you see what Disney's doing now in Star Wars.
Yeah. I was like, they didn't stay there for too long.
Okay. All right. Is that it?
I think so.
All right. Thanks for listening, everybody.
Here's looking at you, kid.
Wrong movie.
We at Hans Shop First would like to thank you for listening and supporting the podcast. We would love to hear from you, so feel free to contact us on Facebook and Twitter at Hans Shop First. Also, please leave us a review on iTunes. Reviews are greatly appreciated and help us get more exposure. Once again, thanks for listening and supporting the podcast.
Again, I know, just like they did in Key Largo.